You've launched a book, Beginner's Guide on Apartheid. If you could summarize for people who view this as contentious, why is Israel an apartheid state? Could you summarize some of the key points that you try to highlight in the book?
One of the reasons why people find that kind of analysis contentious is because of the way in which it implicitly makes a comparison with South Africa. Now, there is a comparison to be made, and it's been made over the decades, and there are some similarities, but there are also some important differences. And the key thing to bear in mind is that there is a definition of apartheid independent of what happened, historically speaking, in South Africa in different international treaties. And we can take that definition and apply it to what's happened and is happening in Palestine, Israel, to see if it matches. And myself and other people believe that that is an accurate way of describing what's happening there. The second accusation against this kind of analysis is that it's a so-called extreme or one-sided position to take. Well, really, it's just a reflection of the reality on the ground now and in the past, because it is a one-sided reality. There is an occupier and an occupied. The Palestinians are stateless, dispossessed, colonized. And Israel is a powerful military state with allies around the world. So the conflict is unequal. You know, it's Israel who's confiscating Palestinian land, not the other way around. It's Israel encircling and besieging Palestinian communities, not the other way around. So if the language is so-called extremist, that's merely a reflection of the extreme reality on the ground.
What are some of the most difficult questions you've faced on this tour, and how have you responded? You've toured all of Canada.
Many of the questions, the critical questions that come up, are actually focused on the issue of security and Israel's perceived security needs, and trying to really provide a justification for some of the policies that I talk about in Palestine, Israel, on the grounds of security. Now, on one level, there is kind of an understandable element of that from the position of Jewish Israelis who feel insecure. But I think a lot of the time, the people who are asking these questions are simply trying to find a way to avoid dealing with the facts, and they don't actually even engage with the specific apartheid policies that are presented to them. And they simply want to deflect attention away by talking about Israel's security needs and this kind of thing. When many of these policies, like the war, like the settlements, land confiscation, the restrictions on the freedom of movement, all this kind of thing, as has been documented by countless human rights organizations, according to Israeli leaders themselves, are not for security, they're for the purpose of maintaining the domination of one group over another.
What's your take on Canada's position in regards to Palestine-Israel today?
Obviously, the Harper government has been one of the most kind of Israel-friendly Western governments in recent times. And I get the impression, to be honest, that there is a large disconnect between the policies of the current Canadian administration and many of Canadian citizens. I've talked some about the critical questions I've had in my events, but the vast majority of people who have heard my presentation and engaged with me and met with me have been receptive and thankful and understand what's going on there, that they understand that dynamic, and they understand that without equality and justice for the Palestinians, there won't be a lasting peace for either Israelis or Palestinians. So I think in Canada at least, and it's the same in other countries like my own in the UK, there is a big gap between perception and policy as well, and a lot of people, average people, understand what's going on, but the government's continuing to pursue policies that support Israel.
What motivated you to publish this book? It was a huge undertaking, I would imagine. What were some of the key motivations that drove you to publish this 101?
I guess one of the motivations came out of reflecting on conversations I would have with people back in the UK or in the US, conversations with people who just through, you know, reading the news or listening to the media have a quite jumbled up, confused idea of what's happening there. And also, for a long time in the West, we've been mainly exposed to an Israeli version of events. So I was keen to write something that would be concise and accessible and could be read by someone who doesn't necessarily know much about the conflict and would describe the reality of Israel's policies as they've affected the Palestinian people over the last 60 years.
Last question. Maybe offer one of your most striking memories from Palestine that continues to motivate you to do the work that you do.
Well, I think of family friends of mine who have a farm near Bethlehem, and they're residents of Bethlehem too. And for a number of years now, they've been struggling to resist a confiscation order that the Israeli military issued for their property. But they haven't just been resisting this confiscation through different legal avenues and international advocacy. They've actually also got on with creating their own facts on the ground and developing their farm, planting olive trees, vegetables, trying to build like some kind of infrastructure there, inviting groups from around the world, Jewish Israelis, Palestinians from other areas. Inspiring because they're not simply giving up or just kind of passively resisting, they're kind of actively resisting by making sure that their hold on the land is as strong as it can be. And in that way, they're one example of the one of the Palestinian people's greatest strengths on the ground, which is the Arabic word samud, or steadfastness, and their refusal to simply to give up and move away, but to stay on the land and to speak up and fight for their rights.